Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And as always, we start with the good. Jim, well, last time we came across Alex Sink, she was losing to Rick Scott in the Florida governor's race in 2010. She is back in Florida politics, running for elective office. It's because longtime Republican Congressman Bill Young died last year, so there's a special election coming up for his seat. She is the Democratic nominee for that seat, and it's a surprisingly competitive race given how easily he won it year after year. But she's now in a very tight race with Republican David Jolly. And so the issue of immigration came up at a recent event where Alex Sink was speaking, and here's her rationale for why we need immigration reform now.
Immigration reform is important in our country. It's one of the main agenda items at the Beaches Chamber of Commerce for obvious reasons, because we have a lot of employers over in the beaches that rely upon workers, and especially in this high-growth environment, where are you going to get people to work to clean our hotel rooms or do our landscaping? And we don't need to put those employers in a position of hiring undocumented and illegal workers.
Jim, I don't think she's read the Democratic talking points here, because every time President Obama talks about this, he's talking about really talented people who come here for college and they could be making a lot of money and contributing to the economy. And her explanation is that we need a whole lot more landscapers and maids. Not exactly sure she's on message there, but it could be good for David Jolly.
If a Republican had said it, it would be ipso facto considered evidence of racism and anti-immigrant bias and classism and snooty, snobby elitism and all that stuff. A couple other points worth noting in this race: that there's a Chamber of Commerce poll out this morning that has Jolly up by 2 points. When you go down to the people who are certain to vote, it is even, so this is definitely a very close race. This is not necessarily an enormously friendly district for Republicans. It is one of the oldest districts in the country. I don't mean that the district is old. I mean the people in the district demographically are on the older side. Young had basically been there so long that only John Dingell could call him a rookie. And so obviously he's one of those things where when you serve for decades and decades, it makes it easier to hold on to that seat. Not a layup by any stretch of the imagination. But look, if a Republican can win in this district, pointing out the objections to Obamacare, and then finally really hammering Alex Sink on this rather tone-deaf statement, kind of implying that there's this tremendous dearth of jobs in the hotel maid and landscaping business, and that we have to inform some sort of amnesty in order to make sure we have legal workers to do this. It'll be, one, a nice example of how race baiting and these types of usual tired attacks from Democrats don't work anymore, and also the power of Obamacare in swing districts, in House races. If they work in House races, you've got to figure it'll be pretty effective in Senate races as well.
You would certainly hope so. And talking about Obamacare, that same poll showed that 54% of voters in the district oppose Obamacare, only 39% support it. There is a Libertarian in the race who right now is getting 7%, while Jolly leads Sink 44-42. You mentioned one other important thing here, though, especially as we talk about the immigration issue. It's a Chamber of Commerce poll, and this story from the Tampa Bay Times shows that the Chamber has run about $800,000 in TV ads on David Jolly's behalf. That doesn't necessarily influence the poll, but it does suggest if David Jolly gets elected, he's going to be a vote for immigration reform, because that's one of the Chamber's big issues right now.
Here's the thing. I think we can safely assume that if Alex Sink gets elected, she'll do whatever the heck Barack Obama wants to do. So my attitude is always go with the guy who might not vote you, who might vote your way, over the candidate who's certain to not vote your way.
On to martini number two now, Jim, and you talked about this in the Morning Jolt. It was a story that certainly got a lot of attention yesterday and to some extent still today, and that's the president essentially ordering Pentagon officials to drop a plan for total American withdrawal from Afghanistan this year. He basically is saying that it's becoming very difficult to negotiate a security arrangement with the Karzai government. I don't doubt that it's hard to get along with Hamid Karzai. I don't doubt that it's hard for anybody to get along with the Obama administration. But based on what we saw in Iraq, with no security agreement and within 2 years, certainly the western part of Iraq falling to the radicals, if this can't get done in Afghanistan, it's really going to be depressing given all the time, energy, and, of course, blood that we've spent there.
It's tough to argue with an American exhaustion of dealing with Afghanistan, feeling like we have spent an enormous amount of blood and treasure trying to turn that country into a decent place to live, capable of charting its own course and just finding Karzai eye to be ludicrously corrupt, ludicrously incompetent, one brutal warlord after another, double dealing, and just wanting to throw up your hands and walk away. Problem is that once we leave, a bad situation is almost certain to get much, much worse. And for about, you know, through all the Bush years, we heard this complaint from, you know, a lot of the anti-war left in Europe, but even all around the world, this kind of sense that, oh, America is imperialist and we're trying to dictate terms to the rest of the world and we're trying to export our culture and we're trying to make everybody be like us. Well, we're not intervening, for example, in Syria, and the death toll over there is now past 140,000 people. As you mentioned, we left Iraq, and al-Qaeda-affiliated militants are still running Fallujah and one of the other fairly major cities there. They've had, you know, for about 2 months now, the Iraqi government has been trying to retake those cities. If and when we leave Afghanistan with zero U.S. troops, it's going to be an absolute bloodbath. And these are the choices to the world, that you can have a Bush-era interventionist, militarily strong American government that is going to, you know, make some decisions that some folks in the world don't like, or you can have an isolationist America, and with an isolationist America, you get a truly massive bloody death toll in these far-off lands. And those are your options. There is none in which the U.S. stays away and, you know, China takes the world leadership role and you don't get bloodbath. You know, China doesn't care if there's bloodbath in any of their countries as long as they get their economic interests protected. So that's where we are. It's very tough to be someone arguing for a long-term U.S. presence in Afghanistan. I think the country is ready to throw up their hands and say, we're done with this. But a lot of people are going to die as a result of this. And it's a very frustrating turn of events for what has been a very long and very hard U.S. commitment to this country.
And frustrating on a number of fronts. I know a lot of people are wondering just how committed we have been over the last several years to actually achieving something concrete there rather than just kind of running out the clock. And when more deaths and injuries happen, and that's the prevailing sentiment on what we're doing there, it gets even more frustrating. So from matters of geopolitical, war on terrorism issues, we now head to CPAC for the crazy martini. And Jim, it's kind of been a soap opera over the last few years. And as you point out in the jolt today over 2010 and 2011, GoProud, the gay conservative organization, was invited to CPAC. Then there was kind of a revolt over that. So they were disinvited in 2012 and 2013. This year they're back, but they don't get a booth. And so their former co-founder, Chris Barron, says they're basically being used. But this is a guy who voted for Terry McAuliffe in Virginia. And at the same time, the American atheists, who aren't technically conservative, were invited. Now they're disinvited. But now the atheists are saying, hey, there's some conservatives among us. The fact that the atheists were invited at all means that Brent Bozell says everybody should just abandon CPAC because it's a pox on the conservative movement. So it's good to see everybody's on message heading into CPAC, Jim.
Absolutely, Greg. I'm glad that after discussing Afghanistan, we can point to an area where there's really ruthless infighting going on. it's kind of frustrating. It's become almost a cliche at CPAC that every year somebody's having some sort of spat about who's invited, who's not invited, and who's representing a true conservative. I think one of the things that's really frustrating is the flip-flopping, in the sense that, you know, I for one had no problem with GoProud attending, and it seems rather silly to say, okay, they can come for a couple of years, and then when other groups object, say, you're not allowed to come. The reason Chris Barron departed, his perspective is right now, basically the CPAC agreement with GoProud right now is that we will not eject you from the premises. That's their big concession to this organization. That you're allowed to come, you're just not allowed to have a booth. And, you know, at one point it was the American Atheist Group. I guess it doesn't seem like too much of a standard to ask for CPAC. And if somebody wants to set up a booth at CPAC, they should be able to point to some area in which they are helping advance the conservative cause or conservative candidates or something like that. American Atheists came along, and it sounded like that as soon as they had their booth application approved, they turned around and said they're going to be attacking Christians and pointing out that Christianity is bad for the conservative movement. And that just seemed like a formula for trouble. So I kind of can understand if CPAC feels like they had a bait and switch with some of these organizations. It just does seem like very, very confused. And then, of course, Brent Bozell had his volcanic reaction to that, basically calling for CPAC to be abandoned, rejected, boycotted, burn to the ground and salt the earth so that nothing ever grows there ever again. And it just seems like what should be a fairly useful conference, bringing together conservatives and you know, what once was a very rare deal for conservatives to get together. Maybe it's because we have Fox News and all these other conferences going on that it's, you know, conservatives are more used to having these sorts of get-togethers. It's a little less special than it used to be. But it kind of gets caught up in these distractions about who's invited and who's not, and who meets the ACU standard of a real conservative and stuff like that. So I'm hoping to have a good, productive CPAC this year. I do kind of hope the leadership be a little clearer. I think they have to sit down and just kind of ask themselves, you know, there's a Stephen Covey slogan of begin with the end in mind. And it kind of begins, you know, what do they want CPAC to be? And I think once they have a clear idea of what that is, everything else will kind of naturally fall into place. So hopefully CPAC will get beyond this. But it really does seem like it's been an epic level of infighting, even for an organization that has been known for the infighting in past years.
Yeah, and the mainstream media has already got its headlines going in, so we'll see how much they pay attention to what's actually said and accomplished there. Jim, fun as always. We'll talk to you later.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.